This episode of the Justin Robert Young Podcast are brought to you by 270 people whom, if they united like Voltron, could surely take over the planet. Wink! In less than 1 week, we will all be joined in Austin, Texas, and we will hear the familiar strains of the Possum Posse themselves at the Diamond Club party, South by So Wasted. It is on like motherfucking Donkey Kong. But that's in the future. Let's focus on the present. My name is Justin Robert Young. You are listening to the Justin Robert Young Podcast. I am today dressed in my Smithian finest. I feel like Kevin Smith, hockey jersey, mic in my face, about to ramble and damble all the good goddamn way home for you, the dear viewers and listeners out there. I am elated today. Today is an amazing day as far as the podcast goes because we had one of those episodes last week. We had one of those episodes where everything that I think makes this show special came together. Like a fine souffle. We had an amazing turnout from you guys in terms of writing into the podcast. We had a great diversity of kinds of stories. We had an amazing reaction. A lot of people are right here in the chat room for the first time because I assume they heard last week's and they wanted to see what happens when it all goes down live. If you'd like to do that, come on over, baby. Come on over. Come on over, baby. Yeah, I'm singing Christina Aguilera. It's the kind of shit you can expect here. You never know. You never know what you're going to get. We had an episode called Neon Signs. That's what we were writing about. We were writing about moments in which dudes fucking totally missed the bit. Women who were throwing themselves at these gentlemen. And what'd they do? How they repay these fine young ladies for setting up a big fucking billboard? They drove right on by. Had no idea. Many of these people had their lives defined by these experiences. People love these. I've been getting emails and tweets about how much people love this episode all week, including more people with more neon sign stories. And we are going to get to each and every one of those. I mean, I don't know. One or two suck, so I didn't put them in. We're going to get to a lot of them, including what I believe is a big finish, a way that we're going to tie a bow on all this neon sign goodness. That's coming up. We also have another important, I got a real pressing email, a young man in need who was saying, Justin, I got a real life quandary. I'm going to go ahead and help that young man out in the next segment. I'm also going to break down one of my favorite songs of all time. We're going to go line by line and break down Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day. But first, let's go ahead and get a little internal housekeeping out of the way. This show is Patreon supported, as I mentioned at the beginning. You can go to patreon.com/JURY. And believe it or not, we are coming up on a major milestone. A huge milestone is I think, going to be crossed in the next month or two. $500 an episode. Now, I'd be lying if I told you that I thought that we would not get to here. I thought that we would. I did not think we would get here this fast. Which is why I've kind of envisioned this jury show thing as kind of a 3-stage process. A, establish that people really like it, continue to make it better. B, do more of it. And C, if it really is something that everybody really likes, do it as effectively a day job, which is what the last thing, $2,000 an episode, which I think we are nowhere near right now. Don't worry if you're like, oh, you don't have the money to make it $2,000. This is a large goal. That would be something that, I think we would be able to make this something where I do it every day. But let's look at 500 for right now, because that's a huge level. And right now, what I have promised for everybody is that we would do a once a month patron only hangout. Now, I'm not saying that we don't want to do that, but I got to thinking. I got a lot of people, friends of mine, that out here on Patreon. Actually, I got a call from Indiegogo, an email from Indiegogo. I went into Indiegogo and I talked to them about, crowdfunding for podcasting and stuff like that. And so it just got me all thinking about, the shows and what do we want to do with them. Now, all these other Patreons that I have, I got partners on. I got Brian with Night Attack. I got Tom with FSL and with Daily Tech News Show. I got Andrew with Weird Things. I have these conversations internally. This, I don't know if you folks have noticed, but this is a One Mic Radio show. All I have is you guys. So, I'm just going to go ahead and float this out. You guys can tell me in the chat room. You can tell me in email. You can tell me on Twitter. But I think it might be a mistake to, at 500, look internally when we could be looking externally. And by that, I mean this. I don't think that you guys necessarily want for access to me. Now, we can still do a Patreon-only hangout if you guys would like. I like to talk. You guys like to talk. I would like to talk to you in more of a two-way conversation than we have right now, which is decidedly one way. But I think I could do more content for you guys. I think what you like about this show, correct me if I'm wrong, is that I do it. And if I did more of it, that would be good. So it got me thinking. I could do just another episode. I could do another jury episode. So we would have 5 of them in a month instead of 4. And that 5th one would be extra. And I think that's what we'll do. But, I could just do another one mic thing. But to be honest, sometimes when I got short weeks, it sort of suffers. Because, it takes me a little bit to gather stuff. Unless I'm in full, current events mode where I'm just talking about the news of the day, it's hard for me to find the stuff to do another extra episode. And I don't want to give you a shittier version of the jury show. So what am I good at? What could I do? And here's what I came up with. I would like to do more interviews. I think I'm a pretty good interviewer. I think you guys would like to see me interview people. Now, the initial rush is going to be, let's just have me interview kind of people that we know, and we've done a little bit of that on Night Attack. We've done a little bit of that in weird things. You know, I don't know how much you guys like. I like doing the fill-in episodes with Brett and everything, and I think those will still be a thing. But I think we can interview some really awesome people. I think that we could interview people that don't normally get a platform. We could interview really interesting stories. So here's my thought. If we get to 500, I am going to be something that I have not been in well over or closing in on a decade. And that is a reporter with an editor. That editor will be you. You will give me leads on who you would like to interview, and it will be my job once a month to go find that person and interview them. And I don't just mean like, oh, celebrities, internet people. No, 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 no. Y'all don't understand the skill set that I have. I have walk into a random person's home, sit down and interview them skills is what my training is. It might be the only fucking use I'm going to get out of this good goddamn SI Newhouse School of Public Communications degree I got hanging on the wall that's done me a fat load of shit. People in the news. You know, like that dude on Reddit who had the two dicks. Listen, he did a pretty good AMA. What do you say you send old Gerbs in? He gives him a good fucking talking to. We record it. We put it right back here on the podcast. I think that would be pretty rad. Interview Putin, people are saying. FSL Garnage. I mean, listen, I'll do my best. But this is the kind of stuff that I think that we can do. If y'all are into it, let me know. If you're not, then we can just do the hangouts. That's totally fine too. Or we can do both. Either way, it's a moot point until we get to 500. It was just something that I was thinking of. Travis writes, I want you to interview a very boring person and somehow make it worth listening to. I think I can do that. I do think I can do that. I think that there is like a culture of a rad culture on the internet of a lot of interviews with interesting people by people who aren't necessarily interviewers. They are good at having a conversation and recording it, but they're not interviewers. They're not people who want to get into stuff. I want to have definitive interviews. I want to have the interview where everybody says, oh shit, this is on the Wikipedia. Where is it sourced? The Justin Robert Young Show. That's what I would like, and I need your help to do it in two ways. A, doesn't happen until we hit 500. B, I think that it would be a fun relationship. Y'all point me in a direction, and like a Scud missile, I go fucking take it out. We are solving motherfucking problems on this show, and we get to that. A major conundrum with a listener right now. Got this email. This email came in from Robo Dashy. Pretty sure Robo Dashy's in the chat right now. He writes, I know it's a little bit random, but I really value your opinion. I think I've said this before on my other emails, but you are one of the few people that yada, 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 nice things, nice things, nice things. I'm in a situation now where I am getting signals from a girl. I want to act on them, but she is my best friend's ex-girlfriend. Fuck. They haven't been together in almost 3 years. They've both been seeing other people, but they still talk a lot, and he is very protective of her. I really don't know what to do. I've known him since we were in year 9. He has no idea what that translates to in the American schooling system, and to be honest, homeboy, I have no idea what the fuck that means. And he really is like a brother from another mother. Fuck, man, I've known him for longer than I haven't known him. But she wants me. I want her. He's over on the other side of the country. And she can do whatever the fuck she wants. Yeah, I sound like I'm justifying doing something horrible, and I probably am. But it's at the point where I know that the next time we see each other, we're not going to be able to keep our hands off each other. We both know that it can never be more than just physical, but that doesn't make it any better. From a battling with depression point of view, if I were to be honest with myself, I think that I'm going along with this because I'm trying to replace the fun and intimacy from a previous failed relationship that completely broke my heart and sent me into a downward spiral. I don't want to use her like that, and I don't want to make myself worse. I see three options. One, act on it, enjoy it for what it is, and never tell my friend. Two, ask for permission, for lack of a better word. And three, avoid her like the plague. Robodashi. Okay. So, Robodashi, I'm going to ask you what country you're in because it does matter to me. Apparently, they have known each other since eighth grade, according to Robodashi, or sorry, Brusselberry in the chat. That is what year nine means in whatever fucking weirdo country you're from. So the question is, when is it? Oh, again, Australia. Oh, man. By the way, we're going to do an Australian politics episode. And hopefully I'm going to bring on a friend of mine that is a former radio presenter for ABC, Australian ABC. It's 'cause to lead me through the Australian politics, because I want to get in on this. I want to go on a tour of Australian politics. So here we go. When is it okay to date your friend's exes? What is required in bro code, for lack of a better term? Okay, so you got to break this down on a couple levels. Number one, there is the time between when they have broken up. And let's actually go back one more level. There are two things you need to remember. Number one, you need to be respectful of the sovereignty of this girl. Just because she dated your friend doesn't mean she's your friend's property forever. Any issue that you might have would be you and her as humans, and then you being a friend to your friend, your male friend. If he had a problem with you dating her, this would be a him problem. The ex-boyfriend's problem. He would be the one that would have to deal with it. And your responsibility is only to the sympathy that you would show your friend. This is not something that has anything to do with her own free will. She's allowed to do what she wants. You are allowed to do what you want. There is nothing innate that is severed by you fucking her with an abandon never seen on the Australian continent. And that, my friend, is something to behold. So let's get into the specifics. Because again, we are to understand that the issue that you would have is the sympathy toward your friend who might be upset about it. First things first, if you are going to ask a objective third party opportunity or a third party judge, I would say that you are allowed to do this, and your friend needs to sack the fuck up if he's got a problem. This is his issue, and I don't think he should have one. Now, it might be a little bit weird. It might be a little bit, I don't know. It'll be weird if all of a sudden we're all going out to dinner. But stranger things have happened. I have personally dated girls who have previously dated friends of mine. My friends have dated people that I have previously dated. It's not, in general, the worst thing in the world. And you might find that the older you get, the more you will run into these situations. Why? Well, by the natural order of how people come together, people who like a certain kind of person might like another certain kind of person. Imagine yourself as the you might also like video after a YouTube video plays. She dated your friend. It was good. You know, I had a good time with it. Got to the end. Now it's over. You might also like best friend. All right. It's got a lot of the same core elements. They probably share many of the same values. They know all the same fucking inside jokes. This seems like a fairly good idea. And there's nothing wrong with that. They have not been together for 3 years. Three years, man. That's a long time. In terms of dating, you are young. Robodashi in the chat room, how old are you? I want to know how old you are. Because, like, I'm assuming, based on what you're saying, that, like, you are in your 20s at some point. So, all right, 31. That means that it was in your late 20s. Holy shit, dude, you're 31? I just turned 32. Fuck this girl, please. Come on. Come on. Okay, you want to know one? Fucking, all right, I'm sorry. I thought I was talking to somebody who was like 26 years old. I thought I was talking to somebody who was 22 years old. You want to know what? I'm sorry. We're ending all that. That's all valid, what I said. Here's some real talk. You and I are the same fucking age. If your friend is our age, then he needs to grow the fuck up if you fuck his ex-girlfriend that he has not been with for 3 years. I don't know what the fucking rules are on that prison island you guys call a country, but here in the fucking first Western world, we know that you're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want. And past 30 years old, enough of this fucking childish bullshit. I think you guys should fucking... next time you see her, you say, that's not a knife. Pull out your dick and say, that's a knife. And get down to the ground the way that fucking only Australians can do it. With camo. And maybe you crush a beer on your head at the end of it. I believe in you. I believe in your friend. I believe that the maturity that you can exhibit is something that can carry through. Now, if you want to go to him and say... Hey, mate, this Sheila over here, you know, that you used to date, now she wants to, I don't know, you probably have some weird word, for like, nimble my pimble, whatever, I don't speak your language. Brass tacks is this: life's too fucking short. 31, this is some stuff that you would deal with in high school. And then blow the didgeridoo at the end of the... when you consummate the act. Have it be... Oh, good God. 31. She wants to Bobby my cue. Dude, you want to know what? I'm gonna give you... This is what's going to happen. I'm going to break down the greatest rap song of all time right now, and I want you to take solace in it, because I believe in you. I believe that this will be you, the Australian Ice Cube, Robodashi. We're going to break down Ice Cube's best song ever, coming up next. All right, I'm going to say my favorite song in all of hip-hop is Ice Cube's Today Was a Good Day, and I love it not only because of the beat, I love it not only because Ice Cube is, next to Flint Flossie and MC Allergy, my favorite rapper, but because of the lyrics. I think these are exceptional lyrics that, as a 31-year-old person who would not hesitate if I were a single man to fuck my friend's ex-girlfriend, who if they'd been separated for over 30 or over 3 years, I still find delightful. So I'm going to break them down for you guys here right now. Let's go ahead and start. song over again. Just waking up in the morning, gotta thank God. I don't know, but today seems kinda odd. No barking from the dog, no smog, and mama cooked a breakfast with no hog. All right, hold on. Here's our first thing that I love. So is Ice Cube a Muslim? I mean, like, is this maybe the earliest and most subtle indication of Ice Cube's Islamic roots in or anybody's Islamic roots in hip hop? Who casually mentions mama cooked the breakfast with no hog? As if, by the way, the concept that Ice Cube gets into fights with his mom about his religious convictions. Yo, mom, no bacon. I'm a Muslim. Like, what? This is a whole nother, again, like good storytelling. Just one line opens up an entire world of possibilities. We are four lines into this song, and we are already far more interesting than most movies that come out in terms of a storytelling perspective. Got my grub on, but didn't pig out. Again, kind of a play on words with no hog. Finally got a call from a girl I want to dig out. Okay, so we go from and we're just going to go ahead and roll with this, an observant and practicing Muslim that would prefer to not eat pork, to I finally got a call from a girl I want to dig out. Dig out. This is also a man who wrote one of my favorite songs of all time, Digging in the Nappy Dugout. The Nappy Dugout! Friends! If that is not the most insane reference to a vagina I have ever heard. Hooked it up for later as I hit the dough, thinking will I live another 24. I gotta go cause I got me a drop top, and if I hit the switch, I can make the ass drop. Had to stop at a red light, looking in my mirror, not a jacker in sight. And everything is all right. Again, a pervasive sense of dread that thematically weaves itself through this song. Ice Cube paints a picture of a world in which death is inevitable and certainly surrounds him. He is, at any moment, ready to die and assumes that death will one day find him. Therefore, every moment he gets on this earth is a gift, and yet it is ruined by these outside influences to the point that today is marked as a good day. Got a beep from Kim, and she can fuck all night. We're assuming that this is the girl got a call he wants to dig out. Unless Kim and the dig out girl are two different people, but we can leave the scholars to debate that. Called up the homies and I'm asking y'all, which park are y'all playing basketball? Get me on the court and I'm trouble. Last week fucked around and got a triple double. By the way, here's a fun little fact. Go ahead and YouTube Ice Cube hitting three pointers. He's like a 3-point specialist. It's kind of ridiculous. Freaking ninnies every way like MJ. I can't believe today was a good day. Fun note about Ice Cube songs. They all pretty much have a beat-driven hook. He very rarely raps the hook. And it always ends with him saying the name of the song. Just something I've noticed. Drove to the pad and hit the showers. Didn't even get no static from the cowards. Again, pervasive dread. Cause yesterday them fools tried to blast me. Saw the police and they rolled right past me. So this one, again, illustrating the complicated nature between Ice Cube and his local law enforcement. In this case, the police, which very often are a problem for him, this a man who sang fuck the police, was a just in the right place at the right time boon, as the cowards did not murder him. No flexing, didn't even look in a ninny's direction as I ran the intersection. Went to Short Dog's house, they was watching Yo MTV Raps, what's the haps on the craps. And at this point, what James Bond did for white and British people and gambling, Ice Cube in the next 8 lines does for black people and dice and dominoes. Here we go. Shake them up, shake them up, shake them up, shake them. Roll them in a circle of ninnies and watch me break them with the 7. 7-11. 7-11. 7 even back dough little Joe. This is something that I've always had a problem with. Well, not a problem, but always a question about, like, I mean, like, so a great story that involves gambling involves and weaves the rules into the storyline. This is something where it's like Rocky is a great movie because it tells a story that is unique to boxing and weaves the rules and culture of boxing into what is an otherwise relatable human drama. This is something where you know more about craps in 4 lines because he's kind of explaining that, number one, everybody's in a circle. Number two, 7-11 is a good roll. Now, even backdooring little Joe, this was always something that I guess I had always on some level thought might have been like a gay sex reference, that little Joe is a backdoor guy. I don't know. I picked up the cash flow. Then we played Bones and I'm yelling domino. Now here we go. This is what makes this song. This is one of my favorite things about this song. We just went 8 lines explaining a fun time with friends. This could have been like, oh, I went to my friend's birthday party. I brought his daughter a present. And then me and the other fellas got together. If this were, you know, just a suburban dad, like, hey, now I'm the suburban dad. Went down there and I said, what's the deal with the dice? Shake them up, shake them up, shake them up, shake them. Roll them in a circle of friends and watch me break them with the 7. 7-11. Like, it's that level. It is just good old-fashioned, good, clean fun. And then Ice Cube, as if to thematically illustrate that he, for a few hours, was able to forget his trouble, brings us violently back to his own world with the very flippant, plus nobody I know got killed in South Central LA. Today was a good day. Damn. Left my ninny's house paid. Picked up a girl, been trying to fuck since the 12th grade. It's ironic. I had the brew, she had the chronic. The Lakers beat the Supersonics. Nothing's ironic about any of that. Now, I understand I've been singing the praise of this song, but let's be fair. There's nothing ironic about the fact that you had beer and she had weed. There's nothing ironic about the fact that the Lakers beat the Supersonics. I think if you look at the records of each team at the point that this song was written, that was, you know, not really all that odd, let alone ironic. Just, you know, not to nitpick. Felt on the big fat fanny, pulled out the jammy and killed the poo nanny. And my dick runs deep, so deep, so deep, put her ass to sleep. Let me tell you a little bit, friends, as I take you into the life and mind of a young Justin Robert Young, who is being on some level educated by the vulgar rap music for which he is listening to. A young Justin Robert Young was understood, or had understood by way of this song, that successful, enjoyable sex ends with a girl involuntarily going to sleep. That you cannot, like, there's good sex, but if you are the best at sex, if you are somebody for whom you should be very proud of your sexual prowess, for which I believe we should all aspire, then it should end with the girl going to sleep when she did not want to. You should be like a 1980s professional wrestler, putting people to sleep at will with your penis. That is what this song told me as a child. Woke her up around 1. She didn't hesitate to call Ice Cube the Top Gun. Drove her to the pad and I'm coasting. Took another sip of the potion, hit the 3-wheel motion. I was glad everything had worked out. Dropped her ass off and then chirped out. Today was like one of those fly dreams. Didn't even see a berry flashing those high beams. No helicopter, looking for a murder. 2 in the morning, got the fat burger. And here we go. There is one line for which I believe to be the best line in hip-hop history. Now, this is my favorite line in hip-hop history, not because it's necessarily clever or the most clever, not because it's necessarily the most well-written. It is because I have always, in my art, enjoyed the expansion from the real to the absurd. It's what I love about Blazing Saddles, a story about racism that expands into a Looney Tunes cartoon. It's what I've always loved about Dave Chappelle's stand-up, very real stories that expand into these unrealistic cartoon universes. And this, we have gone through the trials and tribulations of a young South Central youth who is doing his best to live the life that he would like. And as we enter this man's mind, his danger, his pleasure, it is this line that to me makes it so great. And then I saw the lights of the Goodyear blimp and it read Ice Cube's A Pimp. I mean, how many ways can this be awesome? The answer, all of them. So, did he know somebody that works on the Goodyear blimp to write Ice Cube's A Pimp? Did the Goodyear blimp, are they apparently this 1984 guardian angel kind of service that watches over all of us and rewards us for our good deeds? Is he so drunk that that's what he reads? As indeed, he had the Bruce, he had the Chronic, the Lakers beat the Supersonics. No matter how it works, he looked up into the sky and staring back at him was the phrase, Ice Cube's a Pimp. Friends, let me tell you this. And if you have known me, then know this. One day, hopefully a long, 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 long time from now, I will shuffle loose this mortal coil. And when I do, I would like for somebody to hire the Goodyear blimp, and above my funeral, write, Ice Cube's a Pimp. Not me, Ice Cube's a Pimp. It would be the funniest thing I could ever think of, and a legacy well worth leaving. Drunk as hell, but no throwing up. Halfway home, and my pager still blowing up. Today, I didn't even have to use my AK. I gotta say, it was a good day. If you would like to email the show, it is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. That is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Again, we have so many amazing, great emails here today. Let's just go ahead and get right into them. Ryan writes, I think you should do a cringe show on parents catching their kids in the middle of the deed. It would be hilarious. I happen to have one. How about no? Sean writes, so my story. The year is 2001, I'm 21, and I'm in college. All night I worked as a shift manager at a Taco Bell. One day I was asked to go help out another store across town for a week. The next day I show up at this other store. The manager on duty at the time was 5 foot tall, 90-pound girl who looked maybe 16 years old named Cindy. She jumped my shit the minute I walked in the door because I was 5 minutes late and I smelled like weed. We were fighting to the point where I almost said, fuck it, this isn't my store anyway, and walked out. But she was clocking out and leaving, so I stayed. I later found out that I had to close out the store with this chick and one other guy for the rest of the week. So, the rest of the week, it was Cindy and this guy, I don't remember his name, let's call him Thor, because that's what he looked like, and little old geeky me. The rest of the week, Cindy was a completely different person. Happy, funny, cute, flirty little ball of energy. And yes, I knew she was flirting, but given our first encounter and the fact that I thought she was 16, I was amused she was flirting with a 17-year-old Thor and was none of my business, so I didn't pay them much attention. After my last night working with them, I said goodbye and went back to the apartment none the wiser. About an hour later, there was a knock on the door. Who the hell's knocking on my door at 2 a.m. but little Cindy Lou Who carrying a case of beer? She asked if we can hang out and have a beer, and since she brought the beer, I said okay. We drank the entire case and then walked to the store to get another. Jesus fucking Christ, man. Really? A case between the two of you? Not a sixer? A case? That's, oh man, must have been how you was raised. At the checkout, she whips out her license. Wipes out. It says wipes, but it's whips. Whips out her license and hands it to the clerk. Before I could even fumble my wallet from my pants, on the walk back, I said, "Okay, how old are you?" She replies, 21. Turns out she was a month older than me. So much for my age guessing abilities or attempt to hold my liquor. That tiny little girl drank my ass under the table that night, and still, when it came time, we could drink no more. I told her she could sleep it off in my bed. She jumped at the opportunity, stripping down to a sexy bra and tiny thong and leaping into my bed. And what did I do? I turned right around and went out on the couch, like an idiot, still not getting the hint. To her credit, she persisted, but not as strongly. And after 2 weeks of us hanging out almost every day as just friends, it finally hit me. Holy shit, I think this girl likes me. Well, hold on. Since then, we've been together for 14 years, married for 11, and have 3 kids. So thank God she was and still is so patient with my dumb ass. What the fuck? Yo, dog. This is Neon Signs, baby. Well, we don't come here for happy endings. This ain't a goddamn Hans Christian Andersen tale. This is the Justin Robert Young story. Fuck this
I was too busy blocking out the haters.
Joe writes, "This week was my first time listening to the Jury Podcast, and it was so good I was compelled to share my missed sign story. This took place my junior and senior year of high school. At the time, I was really hung up on a girl and who wanted nothing to do with me. One day at my work, my ex-girlfriend, who I'd never gone all the way with, stopped by and asked if I wanted to hang out that night. I agreed and picked her up at the end of my shift. What followed was a full night, 5 p.m. to 6 a.m., of not one but two missed signs, but a whole collection. Signs including swimming in street clothes, asking to be held for warmth, telling her friend that if she came out with us, we would have our way with her, sitting in my lap so she could drive, and ending with her showing me and playing with condoms she had in her purse. I realized a few days later what I was missing, but it was too late, and she had moved on after her failed attempt. I regret that in my mind it was so set on somebody else that I let this beautiful girl pass by. Now that is shame. That is missed opportunity. That is a neon sign story." Sherman writes, "Hey, just caught up on the podcast and heard your call for missed opportunity stories. Here's mine. When I was a sophomore in high school, I had a huge crush on a guy from my choir in math class." What? Is this a gay neon sign story? "He was very popular with all the girls, 3 years older, with cute, wispy, blonde facial hair, and he practically burst through those clothes in all the right places. I got a big-time bisexual vibe off him, but I had no proof. I was closeted and wrote it off to wishful thinking. When he began flunking math, he asked me if I would tutor him. Background, I was obsessed with grades and being a good student. It was my identity. Also, I was over 350 pounds easy, which I didn't learn to embrace until later. I had a few friends at this point, so I pounced at the opportunity. After a few successful tutoring sessions, he asked me to accompany him to a youth group meeting at the church one night and then stay at his grandfather's house. I said yes. That night, after a dreadful worship at the Baptist church, we arrived at the house. His grandfather was asleep. I quickly showered and came out to see my friend pumping a shitty air mattress for me. I tried to go over a couple equations with him, but he's too busy pumping away. It's at this point I remember that I had an important paper due the next day and I had not started. I panic, tearing open my book sack and begin feverishly writing. My hunky friend finishes pumping the mattress, making small talk, which I respond to with one-word answers due to my distraction. Then he plopped down noisily and laid out on his side, grinning at me. "My grandfather's asleep back there," he said. "His hearing isn't good. He can't hear us in there." He began running his hand up and down the length of his torso. "That's cool," I say nonchalantly, scribbling on loose leaf. "Hey, come lay down," he suggested. He nodded down and patted the mattress in front of him. I remained in my spot, not paying close attention. "Nah, I'm good. I need to get through this first paragraph." I barely look up, just concentrating on my thesis statement. "Come on, Sherman. You know you want to," he said. His hand began rubbing his entire chest. There was an intensity in his blue eyes as he stared directly into mine. "No, I can't," I muttered patiently after yet another interruption. "I'm going to be up all night." At my rejection of mattress time, he got up and told me to have a good night, walking into his bedroom and closing the door behind him. The next morning, he barely talked to me, and I couldn't figure out why, but he did buy me McDonald's. Only after turning in my paper did my clouded memory clear up to realize how bad I'd fucked up. Quickly, I scheduled another overnight tutoring session, but he stood me up. Eventually, he dropped out of school and disappeared from my life. Last I saw, he was happily married with a child, but damn it. The opportunity to be with my dream guy was handed to me on a silver platter, and I blew it for a B+ on the paper. I can't even remember the topic of. Anyway, thanks for a great show, Sherman. Man, I thought that we had stakes with our missed signal stories, with our neon sign stories. But gay neon sign stories, there's so much more. Because, like, now there's real stakes. Who knows? If this dude was still closeted, Sherman, that might have been Sherman's only opportunity for gay sex. I mean, he's catting around right now searching Grindr. But you never know. I mean, not Sherman's, the wispy blonde hunk and a half, Rocky from the fucking Rocky Horror Picture Show. He was there. Bill writes, my junior year of college, I moved into a house with some friends. It was me, another guy, and a girl. Sometimes after my female roommate would get out of the shower, she would come to my room and sit in my lap wearing nothing but a towel. We would talk, and she would ask me what I was thinking about, obviously referencing the erection she could no doubt feel pressing into her leg. And because I didn't want to offend her, I would make up something stupid unrelated to sex that, in retrospect, we were obviously both interested in. I want to make it clear, this regularly happened for 2 years. Only stopping when I met my girlfriend, to whom I would lose my virginity roughly a year later. That's a total of 3 years for those playing at home. I'm still friends with my former roommate, and we have never discussed what happened. But I feel like a massive idiot whenever I think about it. Slow burn neon signs. These are better than last week's, man. This is good. That's incompetent, bro. You fucking... Jesus. Ken writes, I must have had some game that I was too self-conscious to realize in high school because I have a what-if spank bank full of stories like the ones you read last week. I didn't write in because I figured the signals were too obvious. There was no way I could claim ignorance. Over the years, I've wondered why I didn't seize on those missed opportunities. I think I was just afraid. I think at the time, I wanted to remain an object of their desire instead of erasing that desire by awkwardly fumbling my way through doing the deed. Here are some choice examples of what I'm talking about. This is written in script format. Attractive girl 1. I like to ride horses. Me. Hey, that's cool. I've never ridden a horse. Would you like to ride me? I think I'm going to be late for second period. End scene. 4 lines. You're an idiot. Scene 2. Attractive girl 2. Give me your hand. Writes number on hand. Attractive girl's friend. She'll suck your dick. Attractive girl 2. Wink. Me. Probably says something about Spider-Man and walks away to never call the number written on his hand. She said I'll suck your dick. Problem is, when you don't capitalize on a girl's obvious advances, they tend to immediately get cold and distant real fast. You think? Understandable. They put themselves out there, made themselves vulnerable, and I was too chicken to even acknowledge it. Know this, lovely ladies. I think about you a lot and will regret rejecting you always. I remained a virgin until my mid-20s. Listen, I don't want to be one to blame people for things, but you deserve that. You should have remained a virgin until your mid-40s. Jeremiah writes, Picture it. Just turned 17 and my best friend was the same age. She just happened to be one of those smoking hot girls at school. Raven black hair, amazing body, and those gorgeous eyes that to this day I've ever seen. One afternoon during the summer, we were at her house getting ready to go to the community pool. Now, we were very comfortable around each other, even to the point where we often slept together, taking naps on her couch in the evening, and even sharing a sleeping bag once on an overnight campout. Yeah, she'd quote-unquote forgotten hers. I know. Anyway, in this particular instance, with no warning, she simply started to strip with me in the room. Before long, I'm going to take a drink of wine here because this one gets a little hairy here, listeners. With no warning, she simply started to strip with me in the room, and before long, she was completely buck naked, wandering around the bedroom, quote unquote, looking for her swimsuit. I swear, I was trying to look at anything but her the entire time, thinking, geez, this is awkward. After what seemed to me in my raging boner like forever, she found her bikini, put it on, and even asked me to tie it for her. Then turned to me, her hot breath on my face, both of us sweating a little. She asked, "You sure we want to go swimming?" Well, holy shit, what else could we do? Derp? Nate writes, wait, Nate? Hey. That Nate? Hey. Nate Dog? Hey. Ride jury every day. Hey, jury. I'm not sure if it's podcast worthy, but I wanted to share my missed signal story. When I was in high school, I was IMing one of my friends who happened to be gay. What? Two gay missed signal stories? We had known each other for a few months and had become pretty good friends. That night happened to be the evening of Valentine's Day, as gay high schoolers often do. We were discussing our hatred for the heteronormity of the holiday, or so I thought. While I was laying my bleeding heart out, he kept making comments about things we could do together that would just piss off the ultra-conservatives around us. I was so far up on my soapbox that I just used that as a springboard to rant more and didn't realize he was hitting on me. I was so wrapped up in myself that I missed a few messages from him. Suddenly, he says he wanted to ask me something. Being a blind idiot, I assumed he was going to ask something about a comment I had made about the religious right. Well, I don't remember exactly what I was thinking. I said to him, and I read this email, friends, as a direct quote, "I know exactly what you're going to ask, and absolutely not."
I didn't know I couldn't do that.
Again, I repeat, two gay high schoolers ranting and raving about the heteronormity of Valentine's Day, one of them making it very obvious that he would not just like to be a protest buddy, but rather somebody who would share carnal desires, if even just for one, the most romantic night of the year. And when he had just summoned up the courage to do it with somebody for whom he knew he had a safe harbor. This is not talking to the closeted, wispy-haired boy. This is not trying to make yourself into somebody that you're not and convince yourself that you are going to kiss the pretty girl at school. No, this is one gay kid talking to another gay kid and saying, "Sir, take me as I am on Valentine's Day." But before he even got it out of his mouth, he got, "I know exactly what you're going to ask, and absolutely not." We go back to the email. He was weirdly non-responsive after that. And then signed off without a word. I went back and read what I had missed before to see that he had mentioned how much he liked hanging out and talking to me. I realized in horror what I had done, but it was too late. Weeks went by before I heard from him again. Things ended up working out between us, and now we've been together for 7 years, but I've always found it funny how I almost royally fucked up everything, Nate! Hey. No happy endings on fucking neon sign stories, even for the gays. Fuck, man. All right. One more email. Stuart writes, I managed to miss out on emailing in missed connections. While I have a few missed opportunities with members of the opposite, and as it turns out, and same as it turns out, sex. Ooh, wow, jeez, dude. Gay jury listeners, fucking holler at your boy. None of them are quite as bad as the ones you read on your show. I had a few thoughts, though. While listening, it was kind of hard to write this without sounding like an arrogant douche nozzle, but here it goes. I'm 6'3", I weigh about 210 pounds, I'm very intelligent when it comes to numbers, facts, and memory, and have it on fairly good authority, people more than me mom, that I'm a good-looking guy. While I know these things in my head, I see myself as average in most respects. As such, a woman has to pretty much throw herself at me before I will realize that she's attracted to me in any way. I think it's partly a lack of confidence on my part. I'm single after a 12-year relationship, and partly a psychological effect called normalization. This is where you consider yourself and your experience to be completely normal. As such, you wonder why a woman would be interested in you over anyone else. After all, you're just average. Also, I think a lot of your listeners are missing out on losing their V-plates in the misconnection section, weren't ready to have sex at that point in their lives. Looking back at both my and my classmates' experience in high school, 20 years ago at this point, a lot of us both really wanted to be having sex, but at the same time, we're terrified of it. In my case, it took me until university, a week after my 19th birthday, and enough booze to float a small ship before I was comfortable about getting naked with an unfortunate and soon deeply dissatisfied member of the opposite sex. Anyway, love the show you do. Keep listening. I'll keep listening as you keep making them. I read this email, and I was blown away by it, because I think it is 110% true. We've been reading misconnection after misconnection. We've been reading about neon sign after neon sign, and we look at it as, you know, I think a good-natured ball busting, but also some sign that we were defective at a certain point, that we were broken, or at the very least not ready for things, that there were delights that we could have had earlier, positive experiences that could have been available to us long before we enjoyed them. But I think Stuart's on to something. I think that the biggest reason why these things happen aren't because we're stupid, it's because we're smart. It's because smart people's greatest enemy is themselves. It is because if you are smart enough to know all your faults, then you have no hesitation yelling them over and over in your head. So why would the cute girl or guy for which you would drive over a bus full of nuns for in a larger monster truck, why would she want you? You're fat, you're ugly, you're stupid. No. It can't be that. It can't be that her and her friend both want to suck my dick at the same time. That's for cool people. That's for skinny people. That's for popular people. For correct people. For unbroken people. For undamaged people. Me? Us? We're fucked up. Now, eventually, that kind of comes with maturity. Eventually, you learn how to separate some of that really hormone-addled self-deception, self-depression. But then we get to the other side of it. Let's say that young people want to fuck each other, and they often find ways to do it. Maybe these things didn't happen for a reason. And we can joke about it now, you know, because it is funny to talk about, but maybe there's no reason to be ashamed. I don't think there is. You know, we all got reasons. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 18. I probably could have. But I don't think I was ready. I think it happened when I was. Now, for guys, I mean, listen, guys in 13 are fucking talking about whether or not they're fucking or not and judging each other on it. So I don't think we're going to change the world with this. But in hindsight, us all being adults, I feel like it's worth it to look back at all these stories and say, listen, they're funny, the embarrassment's hilarious, and yes, if we, fully formed mature adults, could beam our consciousnesses into the oftentimes teen and 20-something versions of ourselves that are in the center of these stories, we would fuck the living shit out of these other people. But maybe homeboy and his wispy blonde hunk, he wasn't ready. Wasn't ready to go all the way with that dude. And maybe the guy who eventually married the girl at the Taco Bell wasn't ready to do that at that point. Maybe the kid who, you know, was making out with one girl and then, brushed off the other one. Maybe he wasn't ready. And yes, maybe even homeboy who blew off a girl in her underwear to tell her about his Warcraft 3 fan fiction was more comfortable in Azeroth than he was between that comely young lass's thighs. And there's nothing wrong with that. For all of our young listeners out there, it doesn't matter. It's funny now to talk about it. But I want everybody in their heart of hearts to know that Justin Robert Young thinks that you're rad, and it doesn't matter when you fucked. Although it does make some pretty good podcast fodder. So when you start thinking to yourself, was today a good day? Should I fuck my friend's ex-girlfriend? Does it matter that I blew off a big piece of gay muscle that would make most dudes on Grindr swipe so hard their thumb would fall off? And you beat yourself up and you say, oh no, Justin, I don't know, maybe not. I can't handle it. Too much pressure. And you think about ending your life prematurely. My spectral vision will bust through your wall like the Kool-Aid Man, and in a rainbow-colored exclamation will scream in your ear, please don't die!
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.